Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We are talking about the Billy Meier case this evening. I did a whole plethora of shows on other topics for probably the past 3 weeks, and I've been incredibly busy the past week, particularly. So it feels good to, and I'm still busy, I'm not done with this phase, but it feels good to shoehorn in a show on the Meier case. It's really what keeps me in the UFO extraterrestrial exopolitical world. I think that the writings of Edward Albert Meier have a lot of very important and useful information that can help us on a daily basis. And this is the kind of thing that I find particularly helpful in a lot of ways. Billy is about 80 years old now, and he lives in a tiny mountain village in Switzerland called Hinterschmidruti. It's in northern Switzerland. It's in a very wooded area. You have to kind of get there by the back roads, so to speak. Billy has dedicated his life to writing, mostly. He's written about 40 books, and they're written in German, and the German has a special code to it. He talks about this code, the way the German words are arranged. It does something to our subconscious, and the subconscious then will open up in some way, and that helps our whole material consciousness to evolve. And we have a subconscious and unconscious and a conscious mind. You could think of it as three separate minds in a way. But this code, it works on us subconsciously. I've studied the German somewhat, but I don't really read the German. I buy the translations, and when you get one of Billy's books translated, you'll get one page in German, and then right on the other side, you'll get the page in English. So it's interesting to look up the specific meanings of certain German words. And Billy really has his own kind of teaching vocabulary that he uses. One of the books I haven't picked up in a while is called The Psyche. And The Psyche, it tells us, when I first read this book, I have to tell you, it was, to me, one of the most technical books I ever read. I read the first 12 pages, and I realized that I barely understood anything. So I went back and read it again. Well, I repeated this process. It took about 6 or 7 times of reading the first 12 pages before I really started to get a feeling for what he was saying and what it all meant. Let me read a little bit of this book to you, and then we can start to talk about some of these topics. This is the second page. And he says, the human being of Earth has adopted the unpleasant habit of using false word concepts for things and matters, which he or she does not understand or only partially understands. And this is something I like to bring up because it's particularly disturbing to me. I believe that in ancient times, the word angel meant messenger. And it was often used, I believe, when people saw extraterrestrial humans. They saw human beings that had abilities that were very unusual and that had technologies that they didn't understand at all. And this word angel was developed, and it means now a spiritual being that may be in a physical body. And it usually is a quote-unquote supernatural being that has wings. And I think the reason the angels are depicted as having wings is because in ancient times they had technology that would allow them to fly. So human beings at the time didn't know what extraterrestrial meant. So this whole vocabulary related to angels evolved, which was all based on a misunderstanding to begin with. So this is kind of where we are now in the world. Let me continue here. And Billy defines a term he's calling the spiritual consciousness. And he says here, because it can neither be sick nor confused nor disturbed, deranged, and faulty in any way, it can also never be inadequate. And he's talking about your spiritual consciousness there. So every human being has a material consciousness and a spiritual consciousness. The spiritual consciousness is centered in your middle brain in an area called the superior colliculus. And that's where your spirit form resides. The spirit form is what powers your whole body. It's the energy that runs your whole body. It's no bigger than the head of a pin. It caused your heart to beat when it came into your body. The spirit form comes into the body 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg. It sends its energy throughout the whole body in like a lattice type of structure. The spirit form is said to be the wonder of all wonders. Let me continue here and see what Billy has to say. Neither can one state that it receives a form of nourishment from the human being when this person is thinking, philosophizing, and learning, and etc. Also, neither can a spiritual property ever be talked about if a human being composes written words or notes, makes drawings or inventions, because the spirit itself, neither brings forth spiritual properties in this manner, nor can it be fed by the thinking, learning, and philosophizing of the material consciousness. Now, your material consciousness really only functions during the current lifetime. Every reincarnation, we get a new material consciousness, and we keep the spiritual consciousness that we have. All of this can solely and exclusively be attributed only to the material consciousness, the thinking and the philosophizing. So therefore, the material consciousness becomes spoken of, which can, through various other circumstances and occurrences, etc., be able to become ill, feeble-minded, deranged, etc. So your material consciousness can become mentally ill. It can have a breakdown, but not your spiritual consciousness. The spirit form that I was describing, the spirit, it's called a minute part piece of creation. And part piece is a German word, Teilstück. It's a noun. And the human being is animated by this tiny part piece of the creational spirit. And the spirit form cannot be disturbed or affected by anything in the material realm. Thus, it can also not be of help in providing any spiritual property to the material realm. Billy's third contact, Semyasi, a Plaran woman, said to Billy, "Every human has a spirit that records, that does not sleep, that does not die. It records everything that you think, including your impulsations. It is the bearer of the creative realm." I think that's the word she used. She called it the wonder of all wonders. And she said, within each human, the infinite has its seat. And the infinite she's talking about is this part piece of creation. The untouchable spirit, which represents a purely creational product in its form and power as well as in its swinging wave, it is a purely creational product. Now, there's something called the swinging wave, schwingung in the German. That's another noun. And these are electromagnetic swinging waves. They're discussed in the teaching of the spirit. They're periodically build up electric and magnetic fields, which are not bound to matter, but nonetheless include energies and unfold in incredible forces of immense might. So your spirit form has associated with it this swinging wave, which has immense power. Let me continue here, and this is what he has to say about the material consciousness. Material consciousness alone can be creative, as well as susceptible to illness. It can be megalomaniacal, it can be haughty, and it can be many negative things. But the spirit form can only be neutral positive. The spirit form has the same perspective as the universal intelligence, the creation. It's always neutral positive. It always is in a neutral state. Water seeks its level. When water is undisturbed, it's extremely calm. It's always level. It sits level in the glass. Well, you're thinking, and that's a universal principle demonstrated. So your thinking should always also be level and balanced like the water in the glass. That's a creational natural law called the law of harmony. The spirit cannot be harmed or injured by any disturbances or influences. Harm and injury or otherwise damaging influence can only occur to material things like your material organs, but never the spirit. It is absolutely untouchable and uninfluenceable by any material or half-material concerns and factors. Solely and exclusively the material consciousness, and within your material consciousness is your personality. With each reincarnation, you get a new personality. The material consciousness is susceptible to the material and what are called the half material influences. Consequently, you can have in the material consciousness illness, disturbance, confusion, derangement, injury, inadequacy, nourishment, poverty, personality possession, it's called loss, direction, attitude. These are all part of the material consciousness. Now, the spirit has a controlling factor that's called the Gemüt. The Gemüt is the spiritual counterpart to the psyche. It is the factor in the spirit body of a life form. We have a spirit body too, and we have a spiritual consciousness, and within the center of that spiritual consciousness something called the Gemüt, that controls and looks after the spirit, consciousness, feelings, and based and thoughts. So the spirit form has thoughts and feelings, but not like the material consciousness. When you're driving down the street, your material consciousness is in control completely. It's steering the car, it's putting the brakes on, it's putting the gas pedal on, it's using the turn signal. That's the mechanics comes from material consciousness. Now, the spirit form is kind of recording, and at the same time that it's recording, it also gives impulses to the material consciousness. So let me continue here. Now the psyche, on the other hand, is the factor which regulates and looks after the feelings and the thoughts of the material consciousness. And those are thoughts that you're aware of, and subconscious thoughts which you may be partially aware of, and unconscious thoughts which you're not aware of at all. Now, all three of those kinds of thoughts influence you and influence your life. And that's why you need to steer your thinking, because neutral positive thoughts bring about the positive, healthy, good circumstances of your life. So your good thinking will lead to good feelings. Have you ever noticed when you have a bad thought, immediately you'll have a bad feeling? Almost always. But if you have a good thought, you immediately have a good feeling. See, the feelings grow out of the thoughts. It's a natural progression. And the good feelings that are continuing will produce good habits, and you'll subconsciously, unconsciously do right things when you're thinking good thoughts, having good feelings. Typically, you'll develop good habits. Now, and that will lead to good circumstances in your life. Now, if you're having thoughts that are extremely positive or extremely negative or a little too positive or just a little too negative, then you'll have bad feelings come out. Now, here's the irony here. If you're too positive, your feelings will become too positive too. And you'll have a little impulse that tells you something's not quite right. And if you listen to these little feelings, these little impulses, then you can correct yourself and come back to the level glass in the water. And that's what you're shooting for, is neutral positive in your thinking. Now, Billy puts it this way, and this is a little bit hard to follow in some ways. He says, to be positively or negatively unequalized means for the psyche to be Askertet. That's one of his German words. And Askertet is to be very badly out of control of the good human nature. While neutral positively equalized means that an equalizedness exists in the psyche, consisting of equal values of negative and positive, through which no asartung toward the negative or positive steps forth. Simply an equality, and with that, an equalized harmony. So that's what we're shooting for again in your thinking, an equalized harmony. Now the Gemüt, again, this controlling factor of your spirit, cannot be influenced by negative powers. It cannot be influenced by negative thoughts, only neutral positive ones. Only equalize neutral positive thoughts penetrate into the Gemüt. So your material consciousness thinking can go into the Gemüt. The Gemüt always exhibits an equalized harmony, and from which the half-material psyche, again, profits. See, the Gemüt is sending those swinging waves. Remember me talking about those swinging waves? And the Meyer information says they originate in the realm of cosmic electromagnetic life energy. So these radiating swinging waves are coming in. Contrary to the material consciousness. Remember, we have a spiritual consciousness and material consciousness. Material consciousness can create positive and negative thoughts, or neutral positive ones. The spiritual consciousness only provides the neutral positive form of thoughts. Let me read what Billy says here. Therefore, negative and positive are harmoniously equalized and also create a corresponding harmony, which the Gemut absorbs. So your neutral positive thinking in your material consciousness, your Gemut will absorb them. Your spiritual consciousness will actually absorb them. Let me pass on something. If you, like, as your day goes on, if you can listen to harmonious music at a low level, it will really help keep you in that neutral positive state. It will really help the material consciousness stay in neutral positive. And your spirit, your Gemut, will absorb that. It absorbs and works with that harmoniously created thinking. Let me read that again. The spirit consciousness operates only in the form of equalizedness and thus in a neutral positive form. Therefore, negative and positive are harmoniously equalized and also create a corresponding harmony which the Gemut absorbs. So the Gemut is absorbing this harmony that can occur in your material consciousness. Thus, the Gemut has no direct connection with the material body. And indeed, then also not. When the human being erroneously speaks of the Gemut as, well, I don't know of anyone that speaks of the Gemut other than people that study this material, so I'm not sure exactly what he means by that. The Gemut it's another one of his German terms. Again, for the thoughts and feelings that come from the spirit form. The Gemut controls, the thoughts and the feelings that come out of the spiritual consciousness. And we have a spirit body too, which is very interesting. So what I've been reading and discussing the terms associated with this book called The Psyche, which is an extremely interesting, important book, I think, for many different reasons. I want to talk a little bit about Billy's early life. He grew up in even farther north in an area in Switzerland called Bulac, Switzerland. And in Bulac, Switzerland, Billy was living in a town called Niederflux. And early one morning at about 4 a.m., he climbed out a lower window in his bedroom. It was in a very warm May evening for Switzerland. And he sat down on the bench and he looked up at a beautiful starry sky. And this is talked about in an article that he's written called How It All Began. And this little boy is having this epiphany that's just really hard to put into words. He says things like, I heard my own voice say, since ancient times I lived among the stars. And he felt the longing for these great distances and faraway worlds. He also saw the light which the stars emitted. And he recognized the visible light, but he also recognized an invisible light, which he called the love of creation. Now, earlier when I was reading from the book Psyche, we were talking about the spirit form of the human being as being a tiny part piece of creation. What is creation? Creation is referred to in the Meyer material as the universal consciousness. We could call it the universal intelligence. It's neither good nor evil. This is the first thing you got to learn. It radiates love, but it's neutral positive. It is not a heavenly father. It changes. It's not like, you know, the religions define God mostly as being immutable, can never change. Universal consciousness is learning and growing and evolving, and that's why it creates universes. That's why it creates people. So they can have spirit forms which live through many, many, many countless reincarnations. So, and then eventually, well, those spirit forms will merge back with the universal consciousness after many, many long reincarnations. Let me read what Billy says here. In order to reach the high evolutionary level mentioned, the human being must already have lived through his seemingly endless reincarnations of 42 million years of his evolution. We spend 40 to 60 million years evolving into a physical body. And that time period is divided into five different stages. The sixth stage, we're half physical and half spiritual. And we spend, I would have to look it up, it's something like 35 million years in this stage. And then we go completely with no body into a spiritual state. Now that takes something like 2.9 billion years for us to evolve through all these seven spiritual planes and merge back with creation. Now, when Billy was a very young boy, and I was talking about his epiphany or his epiphanies, he also started to get these telepathic messages from an extraterrestrial human named Svoth. One of the things Svoth taught Billy was to pull information out of this first spiritual level that I was talking about. It's called Arahatathrasada. So he could use, at a very young age, for his whole life, he had the ability to pull information out of this level called Arahatathrasada. A lot of times in his life, he didn't like to do that so much because the information he was getting there was extremely complimentary to him all the time, and he just felt that didn't serve him well. So sometimes he would kind of stay away from doing that. That's a bit of a side tangent, but there are seven evolutionary steps that all human beings go through. Now, we think of human beings and we don't think of it in the right way. Humanity, human beings, is a normal life form on all planets, on all worlds that produce life. We will learn this eventually. And despite all the differences and you know, when a planet is in the habitable zone around the right kind of star, life will evolve on the planet, assuming there are water and things like that. And it starts with the plants. The plants will slowly evolve. And you've seen plants where they, like plants that can eat flies and things like that. Well, plants will kind of develop, and then you'll eventually get insects. And then evolution will continue. And, for example, on the Earth, one of the very first mammals was something like 255 million years ago. It was called Adelus basialis cromptona. The Meyer information talks about it being something that looked like a little shrew. It was just a couple inches long, not very big. And mammals kept evolving. Eventually, after millions and millions of years, we got to primates and apes. The apes never developed a consciousness. And actually, they fell into a kind of a degeneration of their consciousness. However, and this is despite what the evolutionists think today, a certain kind of primate on pretty much every world develops the ability to think, and truly have a consciousness. Now, animals do think. They really do think, but this is a step above. This is what eventually becomes Homo sapiens sapien. And that's a very specific term for the evolution as it occurred here on Earth. But humanity will evolve on planets and has evolved on planets all over our Milky Way galaxy. The Meyer material talks about something like 7 million human civilizations in solar systems in our galaxy. Now, some of these solar systems are in what is called different space-time configurations, which, and here's another term which we don't use very well here on the Earth, dimension, in different dimensions, in different space-time configurations, where there's still planets, there's still stars, all the same things that apply to this quote-unquote dimension apply to those dimensions as well. It's not this mysterious realm where, you know, interdimensional beings live. No. There's so many confused ideas in the world today. Now, the history of the Earth is very convoluted. I started a show with Daniel Cooper where we started to talk about that a little bit, and maybe I hope to get back to that. It's a very challenging situation to try to describe this, because what you had on Earth was a naturally evolving human being, just like on all planets that live in the habitable zone and have water and the necessary ingredients for life. Well, this occurred about 9 to 12 million years ago. Well, the people, the truly native Earth humans, were very primitive when we first started to get visits from extraterrestrial humans. Millions of years ago, we had visits, something like 22 million years ago, the first quick visit by people from Lyra Vega. 389,000 years ago, we also had a bigger visitation by people from Lyra and Vega. Again, this was a Lyra Vega in a slightly different space and time configuration than we live in. So they traveled to our solar system, but somehow they changed into our space-time configuration. I like to call these people Titans. They were so far advanced. And this is millions, you know, this is 389,000 years ago. It's very, very advanced. They had conquered many other worlds in our galaxy. They had mixed with other peoples in the galaxy. They had landed on other worlds and, you know, maybe there weren't people on those other worlds yet, or there were people like the native Earth humans, which were very, very primitive. The Lyrians also had a problem with war. They were somewhat still very, very aggressive. And I think they were very tall as well. I don't know exactly how tall they were. But they were known to occasionally destroy planets. So they weren't always such warm and fuzzy advanced people. They still had some evolution of themselves to do. When they were here on Earth, they violated certain rules and laws of their own society. And one thing they did is they mated with some of the Earth peoples, which was against the rules. They also abused Earth peoples and killed them and did all horrific things. So some people, another group of people came here from Lyra Vega, saw what was going on, figured out who was guilty and who wasn't, and they took their technologies and they stranded them here on the earth. So, and this occurred about this occurred quite some time ago. Like I was saying, 389,000 years ago. Let me read here from the book, The Psyche. Okay. In order to reach the high evolutionary level mentioned, the human being must already have lived through his or her seemingly endless reincarnations of 42 million years. It can be 40 to 60 million years. He'll talk about that later. However, this is not true for any one human life form on Earth, and also not for any spirit form belonging to a higher sphere of Earth, because the human beings of Earth themselves, those created on the Earth, remember me talking about the native Earth humans, are still so young that regarding their evolution, they are only beginning to change their last baby shoes. While those human beings living on Earth, like the Lyrians that I was telling you about, because these Lyrians also died on the Earth and then entered into our reincarnational patterns, those human beings living on the Earth who originally came from the far reaches of outer space only have a total age of 8 to 12 million years. So we naturally developing Earth humans have a spirit form about 4 million years old. Some of us may have been with these groups that came here in the ancient past, and hundreds of thousands of years ago, we lived in a very advanced society. So now we've been stuck for hundreds of thousands of years in a society that's way behind our evolution. Therefore, the human being of Earth is not yet in the position to comprehend all nuances and forms of the feeling, and so these will remain inaccessible to Earth human beings for a very long time. When the human being of Earth will be able to do so, then he or she will already long left the Earth. So we will leave the Earth eventually. We will leave the Earth, and we will go to other star systems and other planets. Well, hi, Eve, and hi, Sunny Side Up. I got a couple of folks listening today. That's good. Listening to the live show. I just pop live shows any old time, so I never know if I'm going to get, or how many I'm going to get to a given live show. But in any case, the blue planet, our planet, will not exist for as long as the human being on the Earth here needs for his or her evolution. So eventually we'll have to go to another world to completely finish our evolution. And this is one of the, in a way, it's almost a little bit sad, but I mean, I'm glad that we will eventually have space travel on this planet. This book, again, I can't recommend it enough. It's called The Psyche. It has so much information in it. Let me read something from The Psyche that's talked about on page 106. And this will tell us where we got our notion of the devil, of Satan, of Lucifer. And I'll read to you here, and then we can talk about it again. So there are, it's talking about these gods, let me say here. For that a few clever minds reached into the history of the old Celts, who in ancient time revered a Superman, one of those named gods as God of the Hunt, because he put in place his immense spiritual and consciousness-based powers for the benefit of the people of the Hunt. Ancient lores, etc., showed that this god, with a small g, had two horn-like growths out of his skull. And this god was named Tubal, T-E-U-B-E-L. Upon his death, his position became personified by a Celt who, with a change of name, was also called Tebel, T-E-I-B-E-L, and as a symbolization of the one named God, wore an animal skull with horns on his head. So Tubal, this quote-unquote God, who had tremendous abilities in his material consciousness, used these abilities in the hunt. When he died, this other fellow named Teibel took over his place and wore a hat that had horns on it, imitating the Superman with his horn-like growths. Over the course of centuries and millenniums, the name Tubal was changed countless times until the name Devil arose from it, a name that was seized upon by the young religions in memory of the named horned god, was added as a secondary god, an evil counterpart to the unhorned god of goodness and love. Good and evil was thereby created, heaven and hell. It was then easy for some charlatans, instigators of the people, and might greedy individuals with a talent for fantasy to invent fables and stories which found favor with these people as holy words and the fundamental religious guidelines. You know, this brings me back to one of Billy's experiences that he had with his second contact. Billy met with his first contact for 11 years, and Svath taught him many things. I think it was about 1953 that Billy got a telepathic message that Svath was going to die and that his second teacher would come, a woman named Asket, and that Asket would send a robotic craft to Switzerland. You know, there was a hill where Billy often, he climbed to the top of this hill where he would meditate and where he would think. And this was one of his favorite places. So Asket would send this ship to one of Billy's meditation places. And when he saw it coming out of the sky, he saw this strange tripod system coming down as well. And it landed nearby. And he walked over to this ship. And the door on the ship opened by itself. And Billy looked in, and he saw the inside of a spacecraft, of course, and he saw a seat where there was only one seat and no one else around. So he knew it was a robotic craft. So he sat down on the chair, in the chair, and there was a great flash of light, and he held his hands up to keep the light from hurting his eyes. And he realized he couldn't even see his hands, and he looked around the ship, and the ship is invisible. And he can't even see his body. So the ship starts slowly going up, and he goes over to the village where he lives, and it just hovers over his house for a while. And then it takes off, and it's speeding to the Middle East. And the reason I got off on this tangent is because Billy and Asket, eventually he meets with Asket and they go within the Great Pyramid and down in the bowels of these old cubicle constructions in the pyramid. And Billy sees a great hallway. They enter in a great hallway through a secret passageway, this giant structure, this stone structure called an ashlar disappears. Billy and Asket go in, and then it rematerializes. And by this time, they're wearing special devices which make them invisible. So they can't be seen by the people that are in these old cubicle constructions, which are 73,000 years old. The Maya information says the Great Pyramid is 73,000 years old as well. And Billy sees an ancient spacecraft down there with other ships and other guards, and to his right is like a platform. And on the platform he sees what looks like the cross of the crucifixion, a crown of thorns, a blood-encrusted nail, and like a purse that has some kind of valuable stones in it. And he's very puzzled by what he sees. And they look so authentic, and he doesn't understand what they could be doing down here, underground, thousands and thousands of feet, in the Great Pyramid, and why they would be here. So Askit decides that Billy's seen enough. So they head back up the long great walk, which is incredibly dark. And when they get back to the surface and eventually back in Billy's ship, or in Askit's ship, Askit starts to explain to Billy that there were people on the earth in ancient times called the Giza Intelligences. They were a splinter group of the Pleiaren themselves. And they used religion after the destruction, the near destruction of the earth that occurred after Atlantis and Lemuria fell. They used religion to manipulate the people of the earth, who after that great disaster lost their history, their technologies, and after about 700 years or so, these people were struggling just to survive. And here come these quote-unquote gods from the sky, and they land, and the leader proclaims himself the creator of the universe, and he demands worship, and they set up a whole religion around him. And interestingly enough, his name is Jehovan, who, and then he rules for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, because these people from other worlds had developed extremely long lifespans. And then this lineage goes on, and this same pattern repeats for centuries and centuries and centuries. And Jehovah has a son, Jehave, and Jehave kills his father, and Jehave rules the same way. And Jehave has a son eventually named Arasame. Arasame goes underground at this time. At some point, these extraterrestrials had to go underground, probably because it became harder and harder for them to keep the people of the earth deceived when they could see their technologies and things like that above the ground. So Arasame eventually ruled under the ground, and then the Meyer information says he was thrown out of power eventually, and a man named Jehovah, who's also known as Hen, came into power. He's the same guy in the Old Testament that destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Kamigal I and Kamigal II ruled after that. They used secret societies on earth to try to rule people, rule the people of the earth, and they had proxies, people like a man named Hermann Steinschneider, who was at that time known as Erich Jonasson, or Jonasson, who very much influenced Hitler, sent him down the wrong path, learned everything he knew from these intelligences. I don't know if what he knew was transmitted to him mentally, or if he actually physically met with them, I don't know. But these Giza intelligences were on the earth until about 19, early 80s, late 1970s, something like that. Now, these were the gods of old, some of the gods of old. The term Ishwish comes from the ancient Lyrian term for king of wisdom. And people like Ptah, Pelagon, Jehovah, Atlant, Harris are examples of the ish wishes. And the term is typically only used for men, but there is a term for the women who are also very advanced in the material consciousness like this. They're called the Ishrish. And some of these human beings were in the last stages of the human material existence before changing over into half spirit forms. So the Ishwish, or the King of Wisdom, are human beings like everyone else. But they're much higher in their consciousness and their spiritual development. So they've had many millions of years to reincarnate. So we have, in our history, created this false understanding, the unutterable name God. So we have various designations for that, which is Yahweh or Jehovah or Adonai or Elohim, all these different terms. So in this concept is talked about in the book called the Om Fallen Murado. And some of these kings of wisdom were at such high levels of evolution, they couldn't be around the earth people. And they literally they become of a different nature. And the vibration that we put forth in our ignorance is very unhealthy for them, very dangerous. Our vibrations of ignorance and evil. So, and that's one of the reasons, even though some of these kings of wisdom were really rotten themselves, so they were unbalanced in their knowledge. They eventually, I believe that all human beings become kings of wisdom and will eventually adhere to the spiritual knowledge. But what's particularly dangerous is when these people are at this level of their material consciousness evolvement and they come to a planet like Earth, which is not evolved yet, and created big problems for the people on Earth. So there's an interesting contact report called Contact Report 191. And I need to find the particular area in this where I should start. This is really interesting because this contact took place in 1984, February 3rd at about 8:54 p.m. And Billy is talking with Semyase. This is Billy's last contact with Semyase. And at this time in 1984, Billy's writing this OM that I was just talking about. Semyase says, "Sure, but now to something else. Your work with the OM is going very well. And of course, as usual, faster than we had planned in reference to the monthly amount of work. You should work a little more slowly because the strains are yet very large. But my father," and Semyase is referring to her father, Pratham, "my father and we are very satisfied with everything related to this, and I especially have to express to you the thanks of my father and his hope that every single one of the group members of the FIGU, will do the work entrusted to them to the full extent and to the satisfaction of all. What is addressed by this is that work which is necessary for the interpretations of every single group member, which is to be equally fulfilled by them. These interpretations must be made verse for verse and be rewritten in the now customary and understandable German language so that never again can falsifications and variations come into being. But this can actually only be prevented by such interpretations, which should not be understood, however, by those who so far have not yet understood the full significance of the mission and also not the value of the mission." I think that's the case with a lot of us. Even though we may have studied this stuff for years, we still don't really understand the full significance of this. "In our opinion, such might no longer be the case among the group members. Nevertheless, because so much has happened that every individual must become perfectly clear about everything. And Billy says, I hope that everything will work out and that no more exceptions will appear. And Semyasu says, we may certainly expect that after all these years and after everything, failures and offenses would actually only amount to treason, no matter what kind they would be. And now in reference to the exceptions, you must also fully ensure that no more are made. I'll tell you one thing. These extraterrestrials are very very rigid. When they tell the group to do a certain thing, they really expect it to be done that way. For now, the time becomes when an exception has the most serious consequences, which can even cause the destruction of the entire mission. So back in 1984, there was something very critical going on that they just could not allow any deviations from the guidelines that they were given. From now on, all tasks and works must be filled after the best ability and capacity. Also, the times of the night, watches, and other types of services must be started and finished on time. These people, their whole lives are like, okay, you need to go out and someone needs to go on watch at a certain time, et cetera, et cetera. That's also the times and frequencies of the initiation and meditation. They have times when they're supposed to meditate. They have something called the peace meditation, which helps maintain peace on the whole earth. Now, Semyasu is going to talk about another group of extraterrestrials called the High Council. Through the High Council, we have gotten to know and have received the advice to inform you that in the future, all core group members, starting from the month of April of this year, have to appear in the center, namely for 2 Saturdays and 2 Sundays apiece. Figu has a center there in Hinterschmidruti. It's called the Semyasu Silver Star Center. This becomes necessary because attempts in a meditative form by the entire group strength must be made to change some very dangerous worthlessness in the earthly international situation. So their meditations are affecting the whole international situation. Otherwise, dangerous changes will occur, which will lead to greater destruction than what the earth and the earth people would be able to bear. So there was something horrific taking place back around the 1980s. It'd be interesting to go look that up. Furthermore, you must start calling in your circle of friends so that as many people as possible participate in this business, but in their own places of residence, for each strength is of utmost necessity. I will give you more exact details in this connection in the future. In addition, the whole thing is also necessary for the group members because already for about 2 years, forces became effective in some group members through which they removed themselves from the mission. But these are associated with the same forces that all of you must be concerned with on a grand scale. And you are also necessary for that. One of the most recent analyses has also confirmed to us the fact that some group members remove themselves more and more from the mission. Okay, and that's probably where we'll have to leave it for now because I'm just flat out of time. So anyway, in 1984, Billy was working on the OM, and there were very important things happening in the world, and they were trying to keep the group in line so that other disasters wouldn't come on Earth. Thanks for listening, folks. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great day. Bye-bye.